It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are at midweek for the first week of the month of August 2020. This is the Horn. It is the 5th day of August 2020. And, well, you know, from the Rona to the Godzilla sandstorm to Hurricane Isaias that has wrecked the Northeast, power outages all across it, and murder hornets and zombie cicadas, hallucinogenic zombie cicadas. Well, what a year we're having, huh? Not that I just noticed or anything. Hi, I'm Bob. And yes, it's midweek. It's Wednesday. It's hump day. It's downhill to Friday. But, of course, it's also, you know, prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Still maintaining socially distant services. At this point in time, I don't think we could even get the deacons up and moving. They've become rather more than sedentary, I'm afraid. But nonetheless, the little old blue-haired ladies and little old blue-haired men are doing their jobs down in the fellowship hall kitchen. And today it was pizza, homemade pizza. And didn't they do just the little old blue-haired ladies did a fantabulous job? The little old blue-haired men took them out and delivered them around and. My goodness gracious, I tell you what, they're as good as any pizza joint out there. Yes, indeed. So, that being the case, I am, in fact, Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Munificent Mullah, Gosh a Mighty Great Guru, Bob Kincaid. This is the Cathedral of Common Sense with, yes, the waves of common sense flowing through you from your subwoofer. Indeed, indeed. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, so before we jump into anything else, gratitude is everything. So thanks go out just a few moments ago. Thanks go out to Jeremy and Cecilia, who got us started on our $390 fundraising goal. Thank you very kindly. And thanks to our subscribers for the 5th day of the month. Thank you to Bernice Batty Boop. Thank you to Kevin in Colorado Springs. Thank you to Roberto. Thank you to Kenda in Missouri. Thank you to James in Illinois. And thank you to Lauren in the far frozen wastes of Albertistan. Yes. Thanks as well to everybody who's gotten us off and started on this brand new month. Hopefully there will be a September for the Horn as well. But we are at $375 to go at midweek. And it would be nice to knock a bunch of that down for bill paying purposes and for purposes of not having to have a Friday on the Front Porch community made miracle. So there's that. But, you know, what would it be in prayer meeting Wednesday? We will have some no small amount of religious nut jobbery because, well, the religion industry specializes in that. Oh, yeah. And there's oodles and oodles of potential stories out there in the naked religion industry. Ooh, don't even want to think about it that way. But before that, a couple of emails. Because, well, I enjoy these things. I enjoy your emails immensely. And so I had a note from Mike in Cascadia. A couple of things, Mike says. I emailed Jay Inslee, A.G. Bob Ferguson, and King County Dow Constantine and requested that they shut down the Sean Foicht Super Spreader event in Seattle on August 9th. Good on you, Mike. I know you and Jude have taken action. I hope others up there in Washington State will, as well as folks in Oregon there for the event slated for the 8th, which is the day before the one in Seattle. You'll recall this guy, Sean Foicht, F-E-U-C-H-T, yeah, fucked. No, that's what you'll be if you go to his super spreader rallies. He's going around trying to get the Rona to blaze up hotter, meaner, faster, and more deadly. In the name of Jesus! Right. Mike in Cascadia says, I did a quick Google search of Foicht's previous events, and sure enough, he had large, unmasked crowds larping and smolicking and grabulating and wallering all over themselves, and the public health officials in places like Fresno and San Diego bemoaned that these events happened in their communities. So hopefully the Washington officials will shut it down. Last Saturday, along with my son, we drove a scenic route home to Bellingham from Portland. We skipped the usual drudgery of just blasting up I-5. Along the way, since my son had his mountain bike, I dropped him off at the top of a trail and then drove down and picked him up at the bottom. The Lewis River Trail is 10 miles of joy through old growth forest next to Mount St. Helens. Oh, that must be exquisite. That great big temperate rainforest. Oh, yeah. And old growth? My goodness, I'd love to see that. After his ride, we continued northward on the back roads around Mount St. Helens. What we discovered is that the area is transforming into a mountain biking destination. The town of Randall, formerly a downtrodden logging town, has a new vitality due to the influx of mountain bikers. My 24-year-old son is a devoted skier. On the drive that day, he said he's now more into mountain biking than skiing, mainly due to the fact that he can mountain bike year-round, as opposed to skiing. One can mountain bike almost anywhere. True on both points. So that brings me full circle back to you, Bob. On the drive that day, we listened to your show from last Friday. During that show, you mentioned the 7-month-long rafting and rock climbing season in West Virginia. So the question is, do people mountain bike in West Virginia? Oh, they most assuredly do. In fact, we've got a couple of nice bike shops right there in Fayetteville. I would imagine West Virginia has terrain conducive to mountain biking. It does. Some of the trails are okay for mountain biking. Others are hiking only. My son mentioned that a Canadian study showed that in the interest of economics, communities should cater to mountain biking, since the dominant demographic of mountain bikers is educated and employed 30 to 50-year-olds that spend money on destinations. That sounds about right. Finally, that brings me to Darrington, Washington. Darrington is in the heart of the west side of the North Cascades. In the last century, Darrington was purely a logging town. When logging dwindled, the town lost its purpose. There has been an angry, brooding presence in Darrington for decades. Lately, though, they've developed into a mountain biking trail system, and it's bringing a new vitality to Darrington. If you have a little time, Mike provides a video that tells the story of mountain biking in Darrington. I look forward to seeing it. Anyway, mountain biking might be a way to prolong the recreation season in West Virginia, Mike says, and it is. It's... The season itself, like I said, ends technically, at least the rafting season technically ends on the third Saturday in October with Bridge Day, which we're not having this year. Again, because of the Dondemic. And want to talk about a super spreader event. 100,000 people hanging out and occasionally jumping off of two lanes of a four-lane span, a mile long, and 876 feet above the river below. Yeah, I imagine the Rona could get a real good foothold there. So we won't be having Bridge Day. But people are still coming here, and they're still rafting, and yes, mountain biking. It's not quite as dominant as it, and in some ways, rock climbing has kind of outstripped whitewater rafting, too. Because you talk about something that you can do with next to nothing. I mean, you've got your ropes and your connectors and whatnot, and your helmet and your harness and stuff. But bouldering, rock climbing, it has gotten huge here because there's some pretty fantastic formations. For instance, one trail in the park system is called Endless Wall because it goes to a series of cliffs at the top of the gorge that are known as Endless Wall because it seems to just go on forever. And in fact, there are even iron ladders driven into some of the cliff faces so that you can scamper up and down those. I want to try one of those someday. It's about a three-mile hike in, and it gets kind of steep. Wore my ass out a year or so ago. But it's a beautiful, beautiful walk. Once you get to the top, you just can't believe where you are. But, yeah, there's some mountain biking. I think it'll continue to develop. So thanks for all of that, Mike in Cascadia. And, again, thank you for reaching out to folks to try to shut Mr. Foicht down. Because it really does become infuriating that these monsters, heedless of the needs and well-being of others, these sociopaths and psychopaths who hide behind the lace skirts of Mother Church, are able to do what they do and then claim some sort of First Amendment protection. It's revolting. And so hopefully Governor Inslee, Governor Brown in Portland, Governor Newsom in California will find the starch to put down these attempts to fucking kill people. Because that's what Sean Foicht is trying to do. Kill people. And then especially, also a reminder, for those of you activist-minded in, say, New York State, maybe reach out, like I said, to Mayor de Blasio and Governor Cuomo, maybe even Attorney General Letitia James, and warn them of this coming super spreader event that he wants to get going in New York City. Because if you don't, they just keep killing. Remember Rodney Howard Brown? Heads a mega church in Tampa called The River. And he said, we're raising up revivalists, not pansies. That was his excuse for continuing to have super spreader events in his tabernacle and herpetological what? Zoo. And Rodney Howard Brown, of course, has a history of having laid hands on Nitwit Nero and prayed over him. When he holds his super spreader events, he declares that COVID-19 is a phantom plague. And he says a COVID-19 vaccine will kill off many people. And eventually, back in March, he was finally arrested for violating local health ordinances. But, of course, thanks to the assistance of white supremacist adjacent illegitimate Florida Governor Ron Monkey Up DeSantis, the charges against him were dropped, after which he went right back to having four-hour-long super spreader services at the river every night. Every night for months now. And so it was that July the 26th, Rodney Howard Brown declared that the coronavirus is all a giant conspiracy to get your guns. I can't do his accent for some reason or another. I just can't. South African. Don't know. So let's just go straight to the killer's mouth. Because by God, he's not gonna be law abiding.
There is nothing that is happening today that is by accident. From the rioting, from the looting, from the pillaging, from stirring up a racial war to try to disband our police department so that they can bring in a United Nations police force of 500,000 people that are not loyal to the American people and they're not loyal to the Constitution, so they can force exactly what they want to take place in America, which, let me tell you, will be the gun confiscation ultimately. That's why they're trying to push this thing with COVID-19. They're trying to drag it out so they can put masks on every single person, because that is the forced compliance that will come, and then where everybody will have to get a vaccine ultimately to save you from this thing. And I want you to know there are already 190 different variations of COVID-19. A vaccine can maybe cover one or two. So what vaccine are you actually getting? That's what I want to ask you. If you don't believe in the healing power of God, you're a walking dead person anyway. Because even if you go and get the vaccine, you'll be dead within a couple of years. It doesn't really matter. If you do not understand what is taking place, this is tyranny that is being forced upon the American people by medicine.
Yeah, that's right. That's the tyranny of medicine as opposed to the freedom of ignorance and superstition in Rodney Howard Brown's demon-haunted world. Yeah. And curiously, I haven't seen anybody, I haven't seen any accounts of ventilator hoses miraculously extracting themselves from horizontally crucified COVID patients, and the said COVID patients getting up and going walkabout. Again, that's Australian, not South African. But this is the toxicity of a fetishized First Amendment. I fully support religious freedom. I do not support the freedom of religion to impose itself on people who do not want it. And I certainly don't support any sort of religious liberty that allows, under that guise, hustlers and gospel sharps to actively try to kill Americans or anyone else, like Rodney Howard Brown does. If you get the vaccine, you'll be dead in a couple of years. You know, it's interesting that because Nitwit Nero's out there pimping a vaccine that doesn't exist, and yet Rodney Howard Brown, who has laid hands on Nitwit Nero, I don't know, maybe even wallered him with a little bit of Crisco oil for all we know. Or maybe tanning butter, I don't know. But Rodney Howard Brown is going to encourage people, and, you know, he's got a flock of thousands, and flock, yet sheep, well, sheeple, He's going to encourage them to not get a vaccine, if there is one. And this puts me at odds with myself. I support vaccinations. I am a firm acknowledger of germ theory and science. But I am skeptical of any vaccine that will be developed during the reign of Nitwit Nero, because I simply do not trust him to get it right. Remember, he owns stock via a hedge fund in one of the companies that manufactures a shit ton of hydroxychloroquine, and I believe also remdesivir. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the problem is the politicians have sold America out for pennies on the dollar. The last stand is the church.
The politicians sold America out for pennies on the dollar. I wonder if that also includes the massive tax cut that Rodney Howard Brown got as part of the trillion-dollar sellout. Pennies on the dollar? It's 100 trillion pennies in that Republican giveaway. As Trey points out, Trey says, I will not put anything in my body that is endorsed by COVID Caligula. I'm not an anti-vaxxer, just anti-Republicans. Exactly. How could you possibly trust it? And by the way, Kyle says, well, Bob, you know, in this country, freedom of religion means they're free to shove their religion in our faces and use it as an excuse to not follow the law. The way you're describing it is what it's supposed to mean. And hasn't, I'll add, for a very long time. The last stand is the church.
I told you this. I told you this months ago. Whatever we lose on the front end, we'll never get back on the back end. You could see it already now. Churches in California that are not allowed to open. You could see it even down with the Supreme Court ruling where they favored casinos at 50% and a church has to meet with 50 people.
That's a big one with them. Why can't? Well, because at least the casinos are honest about their hustle. You know, every casino, the rule is what it is. The house always wins. And the same applies to gospel sharp operations. They always win, too. They just don't tell you. Instead, they tell you that because you're associating with them, that you get to magically live in a land of streets paved with gold after you don't exist anymore. Trey pointing out evangelicalism is the second oldest profession in the world.
How is it possible that it's fine to go and gamble and sit at a crap table and pull one-armed bandits, but it's illegal to go to church? Who even comes up with this kind of thing? And then the church just rolls over and plays dead. Preachers playing dead. Well, let me tell you, here is one pastor that is not going to play dead, and I'm not rolling over. I don't care if I have to get arrested again.
He doesn't care if he has to get arrested again because he knows he's not going to be arrested again because white supremacist adjacent illegitimate Florida Governor Ron Monkey Up DeClantis has made clear that this sociopath will get to go on killing people. Just like all too many other sociopathic gospel sharps all around this country. Ah, but the camera does pull back for a moment, and you get to see that, lo and behold, yeah, Rodney Howard Brown is preaching outside, and they've got little canopy tents up and isolated groups. So he may not believe in the Rona, but by God, he's got his marks social distancing, because they might just, one of them might just kill him.
And I actually don't care if I have to get killed.
Yeah, he does. That's why everybody's social distancing out there.
We will not compromise. I know what the Word of God says.
He's already compromised. That's why they've got the little canopy tents and discreet little groups instead of having everybody like at a Sean Foyt super spreader, LARPing and wallering and grabalating and smollicking all over one another and spraying and spewing and singing at the top of their lungs, "Onward, Christian soldiers," and whatnot. Yeah. The killers are among us, and the calls are coming from inside the house. Oh, yeah. But one of my favorites lately has to be this clip. From Dave Dobenmeyer. You remember him, Coach Dave. Yeah, the miserable racist. And was barely able to save his precious daughter from being recruited into the homosexual agenda by short-haired lesbian softball players with big bottoms. Remember? Yeah. Yeah, that Dave Dobenmeyer. Genuine damn piece of work he is. And so it's no surprise that he decided to unburden himself of his concerns about the funeral of John Lewis. Because he was really, really angry at everybody who attended John Lewis's funeral. Yeah. Some serious stupid going on here. Big time. Bigly. Now, we had a couple of clips, especially from President Obama, his eulogy there at Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta. And at the time, I remarked on the fact that everybody in that church was practicing social distancing and wearing a mask. Yeah, even though Brian Kemp didn't want him to. And so, Dave Dobenmeyer, well, I guess he was afraid he might get some demons in through his ears and eyes if he was to actually watch the thing, because he displayed his ignorance in rare fashion, even for him.
John Lewis's funeral, which was held in Georgia, where all the potentates and dignitaries showed up.
Potentates.
And none of them wore a mask.
None of them. Nobody who showed up to John Lewis's funeral wore a mask. Except, of course, all the people who were wearing masks.
None of them. See if you can find a picture of the crowd not wearing masks, Mike. I saw one this morning. I should have captured it.
Yeah, no, you didn't.
All of them. All of them in the church not wearing masks.
And of course, this is going to lead him to announce his fury at all those people wearing masks who weren't wearing masks. It was a mask hallucination is what it was.
Wearing masks. But we have to, right? We have to wear masks. Did they have to quarantine themselves after they left? No, they didn't. They didn't. See, there's a set of rules for us. There's a picture. It's not, that's not the one I was looking at. I saw
it. No, you didn't see it. Because everybody was wearing, well, masks. These people. But he's also mad at Mayor Lori Lightfoot of Chicago. Chicago will be going to online instruction in their school system because Chicago's burning up with the Rona. Yep, Dave Daubenmeyer doesn't want Lori Lightfoot to be mayor of Chicago because, you know, he, Dave Daubenmeyer, has the, well, I guess the First Amendment religious liberty right to make such declarations. You know how, you know for sure these gospel turds and right-wingers are actually lying to their sheep, Steve in New York asks? They have their candidate, you know, God's candidate. They have the Senate. They have the Supreme Court. Yet it's always about the godless liberals who are everywhere and control everything who are persecuting the church. Even when the church, well, isn't being persecuted. Kind of amazing, really. Yep. But you know why he doesn't want Lori Lightfoot to be mayor of Chicago, right? Of course. Because to gay. Gay, 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 gay.
I caught some hell when I put this up on my Facebook page. I don't care. I really don't care if they get mad at me or not. I want somebody to tell me right there how that woman gets elected any place, anywhere. That is the mayor. That is the mayor of Chicago and her wife. Now, can you tell me how how could any say, Coach, you sure are being judgmental. I'm not being judgmental. I'm merely looking at what I see and say to myself.
It's just being a bigoted ass.
How could any sane person elect that woman to be head of the
woman?
Can somebody weigh in and help me out on that one? Other than the homo that keeps trying to get in here and disrupt us, him? Yeah, go ahead.
Coach, she wasn't elected. She was selected. Just
whatever. Whatever. However, who somewhere decided this would be the standard bearer? This is the picture of that the city of Chicago wants to send out to the world of as the leader, the top political leader in their city, right there. Somebody explain it to me.
All compromise, Coach. All compromise.
And you tell me that we're dealing with sane people.
I thought it was a Halloween picture. I thought Beetlejuice and Lurch were dressed up for Halloween.
It's amazing. CDL, you're being insensitive now. You're not being.
You're right.
You're not being caring. Yeah. You're not being loving. See, we've gotten in this mess because we haven't pointed out the obvious, right? Listen, folks, there's something seriously wrong with this woman. If she would marry that other woman, there's something seriously wrong with her judgment.
I'll bet you a dollar to a donut that Mayor Lightfoot's IQ is every bit of 75 points higher than Coach Dave's here. What a fucking moron. Kyle, all caps. The queers are coming for your daughter again, Dave. Quick, hide her before they turn her into a lesbian again. Ah! Oh, what a schmuck. Something wrong with anybody who would marry her. Yeah, I don't know. I think there's probably something wrong with anybody who'd marry Dave Daubenmeyer. Can you imagine being around that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? As to Rodney Howard Brown, Brother Deacon Asa says, gosh, it's a beautiful grift when you can tell the rubes with a straight face, mind you, that their Merkin government has sold them out when you don't even have Merkin citizenship. Yep, he's still fully South African. Tis indeed a beautiful hustle. And yes, as the prayer meeting offertory hymn says, and it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. Steve in New York says, Coach Dave knew full well they were wearing masks at John Lewis's funeral. He also knew his brain-dead followers wouldn't look for a photo. Yeah, why bother? Sure. So it's Wednesday, right? Meanwhile, it's been a while since we heard from Josh Bernstein. Now, this was the guy who called for various assassinations, got away with it, called for people to shoot at cops if they came for their guns. And here we find out that he's become an expert in race baiting white supremacy. Because, of course, the coming race war.
I'm proud to be white. Man, I'm white. I got white skin. I got no hair, but I got a white head. I am white. I have no problem with it. I have zero guilt for being white. I love being white. I can't help it, but I love being white. Hell, I eat white bread. Okay? I like white sugar over brown sugar. Does that make me racist too? I have zero white guilt. Zero. And...
Then why are you protesting it so loudly?
I'm a big, strong proponent, of the Second Amendment. I am always packing heat. So if anyone out there is going to try to kill white people, I suggest that white people get armed immediately, okay? You are a target, unfortunately. Now, that doesn't mean that every single person that you meet that's black is going to want to kill you, okay? That's not the case here at all. There are many amazing black patriots. I know many of them.
They've got a friend who's a black patriot, right?
Friends with a lot of them. But there is also...
He doesn't just have a black friend. He's friends with a lot of them.
Also, a certain amount of people that truly do want to spill white blood. And you have to be prepared for that. You have to protect yourself. You have to be packing heat. I don't care how you get a gun. I don't care what the state laws state.
Wow. He's actually advocating for people, encouraging people to, if necessary, obtain firearms illegally. Now, mind you, the things like straw purchasers are why Chicago has the problems it has, why Detroit has the problems it has. People in Illinois, in the Chicago area, go up to Wisconsin, where the gun laws are much more lax. And then, of course, there's also a firearm superhighway that runs between, say, Detroit and West Virginia, because guns are easy here. Yeah, I don't care if you have to break the law to get a gun. You white folks need to get a gun and get ready to kill some black people. He said it out loud. You heard him.
I've always said, and I'll say it again, the Second Amendment is your gun permit. That's it. It is final. It is finite, and you need to protect yourself.
Because, and of course, no one's ever threatened him. But he lives in a world of bloody paranoid fantasies. Him with his white pride. Huh. Who walks around talking about white pride? Yeah. The Klan? Neo-Nazis? You better believe it. But it wouldn't be prayer meeting Wednesday if we didn't have a story of a pervy evangelical preacher. In this case, Perry Stone. He, of course, is a he loves him some Donald Trump. It was back in 2019 when Perry Stone predicted that God would hammer America with tsunamis because abortion. Really.
When there is a birthing pain in a woman, there has to be a breaking of water. And once that water begins to break, that's when you know the child is coming. And an abortion has to go in and break that water and pull that child out. So here's what I want to say to you, and I want to say this. I'm standing here at OCI at this year at a prophetic summit to make a prediction I am not afraid of. Because one day you will go back to this DVD, and some of you will go back to this television program, and you will say Perry Stone said it on a Sunday morning, the last night of the prophetic summit. I am here to announce to you that unless there is true repentance, unless the corporations in America quit supporting pro-abortion mills, unless the American people and their politicians begin to understand that life is sacred from the beginning, we will experience a judgment of water in the United States of America. Now, I'm going to be careful with this because I have been on a dear friend of mine's program from Branson, Missouri, and we've discussed this in detail, and some of you may have seen that.
Oh, that would be Jim Baker.
But I believe that when we breach the water and the water breaks in order to pull a child out, God's judgment, with the same judgment you judge, is judged back to you. So the judgment
what?
God will use against those who shed innocent blood and legalize it will be...
Wow, he just turned I'm rubber, you're glue, what it bounces off me and sticks to you into some sort of bizarre evangelical prophecy?
A judgment using water. The water will come through two methods. It will come through extreme flooding, in which flood waters will destroy cities, towns, and land. But it will also come, and I'm very careful saying this, but will also come through tsunamis. I have seen in the spirit. In fact, I went through a time.
Yes, yes, the great Des Moines tsunami of... Wait, it didn't happen. So anyway, he's a big time maggot preacher. And he spends a lot of time worrying about the precious little fetuses. And by the way, this might be interesting. He is from the same neck of the woods where our buddy Richard now resides in Tennessee. And there he was prophesying away back in 2019, but a few months back, about 4 months ago, he made a sudden announcement. Perry Stone did. Bill Barrick says, Harry Stone. Bob, I had no idea that hair grows on stones. I learn something new on every prayer meeting Wednesday. Night court. Yep. Different Harry Stone, dear.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, all of a sudden, he kind of disappeared. And it turns out that while they didn't immediately explain why he took a rather long powder, his hustle there did announce that he's cleared his travel schedule and for several months, and I just want to get away with the Lord. Get away with something, all right. I just want to get away with the Lord and will not be conducting any meetings or prayer meetings or sermons or speechifyings. No, no. Well, this past Tuesday night, or two Tuesdays ago, a week ago last Tuesday, he came back to the pulpit. He said he'd been having some health issues. He had to cut down on his workload. Curiously enough, God Almighty did not cure his health issues. And health issues apparently have a fairly broad definition with Perry Stone. Up to and including accusations of inappropriate behavior with female employees. At least according to the Chattanooga Times Free Press. Perry Stone had been away from his multi-million dollar ministry in Cleveland, Tennessee for 3 months, leaving many of his followers confused. Well, I'd say they weren't too far from confused when they walked through the door, and it only got worse after that. In an audio message played for a small in-person group of church members several weeks ago, he said let's let Perry Stone describe it.
Recently, some female employees at VOU requested to meet with our board of directors to address complaints that I had acted inappropriately with them and with words and sometimes actions. The board gathered the information and met.
Words and sometimes actions. Actions.
Need to question you concerning this. And after several meetings, the board did the right thing, and they asked me to step aside from all pulpit and travel ministry for an extended period of time. So today I remain under the authority of our board of directors and have taken an extended and honestly some much-needed sabbatical away from all forms of ministry. I have been spending several weeks at a special location out of state in a special clinic to receive professional counseling every day and also to get the medical help that I feel like I need. Let me say, and I'm saying this from the deepest part of my heart and spirit, I sincerely, with everything that's in me, regret any words or actions that I have said or done that made anyone feel uncomfortable or that may have brought them hurt in any manner. And I confess at times I've been inappropriate in all this weariness of just nonstop ministry.
Oh, now hold on a minute. Did he just blame how hard he works as a gospel sharp for the fact that he was, I don't know, handsy and rapey and verbally pervy? All this weariness of just nonstop ministry. I let my guard down. Guard against... Wait. So he let his guard... The only time you let... The only... If that means somebody's coming after you from outside. I don't think any of his victims made him behave the way he did. I let my guard down, and I've asked, of course, God to forgive me for that, and he did, because I asked. That's all you got to do is just ask. I sat down with my family and my beautiful, precious wife, Pam, the love of my life. I asked her to forgive me, and I very humbly and very sincerely asked those who've been hurt or offended by my actions to please also forgive me for those things and not sue me in this hustle I got going on here into oblivion. No, I added that last part. So at the very least, it sounds like sexual harassment, if not abuse or assault. The Times Free Chattanooga Times Free Press reached out to Perry Stone. Naturally, he didn't respond. But the name of his hustle is Voice of Evangelism. And their board of directors said in a statement that first he was sent on sabbatical because of concerns about his health. Then again, how could you tell? Because, I mean, honest to Pete, if you're standing in the pulpit saying that Duluth, Minnesota is going to get wiped out by a tsunami, I'd say there are at least early signs, well, consistent signs of mental health problems, but, well, in the evangelical world, those aren't recognized as such. Yeah, but then the board of directors said something else. Secondly, a couple of employees at VOE requested to meet with the board of directors to address concerns of inappropriate words and actions. Upon review, the board determined that the issues were civil in nature and not criminal, because, you know, they're empowered to do that. No, they aren't. But that the behavior deviated from the biblical standards set in place for Voice of Evangelism leadership. So the board unanimously initiated his current sabbatical. This action was not reactionary, but with much prior, and was set in place to uphold the Haas standards of integrity and transparency. Yeah. No word on when Perry Stone's going to be back in the... Well, it probably has something to do with when the check clears. What? Megan asks. If tsunamis are God's judgment on the country for abortion, then what's her judgment going to be for support of the Second Amendment and kids getting their heads blown off in school? Well, see, there you go. I mean, you're a heretic, Megan, talking about God being a her when everybody knows that Great God Almighty, the big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, Yahweh Jehovah, is all man. And Jeremy in Vermont says, I just knew when he said he'd seen through the spirit what was to come. He really meant spirits in bottles, seen all the way through to the bottom. Kind of got to close one eye. Otherwise, you see two. And back to Josh Bernstein, packing heat. Steve says, I know I've asked this a million times, but I have to again just to see if the answer's changed. Bob, I've been all over New York. I've been in bad neighborhoods at night, at all times, and alone. Why is it that I have never, not once, felt the need to pack heat? Am I stupid or just not a cowed paranoiac? I'll bet there's no other program in the country where you'll hear the word paranoiac. I won't take the bet because I think you're right. Well, see, Steve, you understand that a firearm carried for self-defense is only good if you have the ability to predict an ambush. A firearm carried for self-defense will not help you in the least in a drive-by, or when some asshole with an AK-47 starts hosing down a room full of human beings. No, You're just using your big old high functioning primate brain. That's what you're doing. Steve adds, I asked my victims to forgive me. I also thank them for the fact that all their donations to the Voice of Evangelism went to pay for me to go to the $25,000 a month luxury spa. I mean, treatment center. Out of state, he mentioned. Out of state. Maybe he went to, say, Nevada, where prostitution's legal, and just got it all out of his system. And a Rona update. Jeremy in Vermont points out 158,000 deaths in climbing. But Bob, we were told via that HBO interview last night, the death count is what it is. AKA, please die quickly and quietly.
It is what it is.
Jesus. And this is more in the way of something kind of humorous-ish. Oh, by the way, there's 135 dead out of the blast in Beirut. Numbers climbing, and there is an American in that number. Jesus. We're at the top of the hour. The filibuster's been going on for an hour. We've still got $375 to catch up with the middle of the week. It would be mighty helpful if we could. And thanks to Cecilia and Jeremy for getting us started. Thank you again. But I said a sort of humorous-ish story. I get all kinds of right-wing emails. No, Randy, this is not an old program. Bridge Day would not have passed by this year. Bridge Day doesn't happen until the third Saturday in October. It's still August. No, the state of North Carolina, and you give them credit for doing the right thing. This is, you know, in the Capitol Rotunda there in D.C. Is Statuary Hall. And each state gets to place two statues. Of noteworthy people from that state. And statues have come and gone. And I'm looking here because, damn it, it's alphabetical. And so it takes a minute to sort of get through there. North Carolina gets its two statues. John C. Calhoun of South Carolina is still there and needs to go. Charles Brantley Aycock is one of, until recently, was one of North Carolina's two statues. He was the 50th governor of North Carolina and was in office from January 1901 to January 1905. And he was a vicious white supremacist. Among other things, he was one of the primary leaders of the Wilmington Insurrection of 1898. White people rebelled and took over the city government of Wilmington, North Carolina, by force and got away with it. Planned violence to suppress the African American and Republican communities grew into unplanned bloodshed. The frenzy over white supremacy victory, incessantly repeated by orators such as Alfred Moore Waddell and Charles Aycock, simply could not be quieted. after an overwhelming and somewhat anticlimactic election victory. So this white supremacist gets himself elected governor of North Carolina. And while governor delivered a speech on the Negro problem, in which he argued for continued separation and segregation, subservience, and a ban on people of color participating in government. I am inclined to give you our solution to this problem. It is, first, as far as possible under the 15th Amendment, to disenfranchise him, meaning the Negro. After that, let him alone. Quit writing about him. Quit talking about him. Quit making him the white man's burden. Let him tote his own skillet. Quit coddling him. Let him learn that no man, no race ever got anything worth the having that he did not himself earn. That character is the outcome of sacrifice and worth is the result of toil. That whatever his future may be, the present has in it for him nothing that is not the product of industry, thrift, obedience to law, and uprightness. That he cannot, by resolution of council or league, accomplish anything, that he can do much by work, that violence may gratify his passions, but it cannot accomplish his ambitions. That he may eat rarely of the cooking of equality, but he will always find, when he does, that there is death in the pot. Let the Negro learn once and for all that there is unending separation of the races, that the two peoples may develop side by side to the fullest, but that they cannot intermingle. Let the white man determine that no man shall by act or thought or speech cross this line, and the race problem will be at an end. Well, these things are not said in enmity to the Negro, but in regard for him. Him. So that guy actually stood for decades in Statuary Hall in the United States Capitol, permanently rendered honor by the people of the state of North Carolina, standing there in his frock coat, with his finger pointing at words on a page. Only in this year did UNC Chapel Hill take his name off of a dormitory on that campus. So, he's getting replaced. Hey, Charles Aycock is. He's got him a memorial, though, at the North Carolina State Capitol there in Raleigh. But he's getting replaced. And here's where it gets really hilarious. In their attempt to remove a racist from an honor bestowed by his state upon him, the folks of North Carolina who have the ability to make these determinations, said what we need here is somebody that all North Carolinians can agree was a great person and worthy of our honor. And I confess my knowledge of North Carolina's history is somewhat lacking. So I don't know who would have been a good replacement, but I can tell you the person they came up with to replace him is a real Lulu. Yeah. Billy Graham. They're going to replace a white supremacist with an anti-Semite. It was 2002 when more tapes from the Nixon White House were released. And lo and behold, Billy Graham is on those tapes, just chatting with President Nixon and giving him a shoulder to cry out his grievances upon. Right. And in that tape, they talked about, of course, Jews. And the best part of it was that H.R. Haldeman, back in 1994, himself a crook, a Watergate crook, Haldeman mentioned the conversation with Billy Graham in his book in 1994. And Billy Graham said, "It never happened. I never said any such thing. I strongly deny it." And then the tapes came out in 2002. In which Billy Graham can be heard to say, "The Jews, Mr. President, are pornographers." Yes. Yeah. Pornographers. And of course, Nixon was thrilled to pieces to have that kind of an affirmation from the biggest gospel sharp in the United States.
The Supreme Court decided Roe v. Wade in January 1973, removing most restrictions on abortion. President Nixon told his special counsel, Chuck Colson, that even though he believed abortion encouraged permissiveness, it shouldn't always be out of the question.
You got that? Well, there are times when abortions are necessary. I know that. You know, that's when you have a black and a white. And Chuck Colson, who would go on to become run a pretty significant gospel hustle in his own right, said, or rape.
In another of the candid and sometimes coarse conversations released today, the president muses about anti-Semitism. He's talking to evangelist Billy Graham and worries about reaction to the Washington visit of Israeli Prime Minister Golda Meir, because Israel has just shot down a Libyan passenger plane.
Anti-Semitism is stronger than we think, you know. It's unfortunate, but this has happened to Jews, it happened in Spain, it's happened in Germany, it's happening, and now it's going to happen in America if these people don't start behaving. It may be they have a death wish. You know, that's been the problem with our Jewish friends for centuries.
Richard Nixon, the Jews have a death wish. Yeah, that's why the Holocaust. That's why the pogroms. Because Jews have a death wish. But old Billy's on the other end of the line.
Well, they've always been, through the Bible at least, God's timepiece. And he has judged them from generation to generation, yeah, and yet used them, and they've kept their identity.
On Inauguration Day, 1973, on the phone with Colson, President Nixon, ruthlessly pragmatic, justifies the Christmas bombing of Hanoi as necessary to break the deadlock in the Paris peace talks.
We all know that this whole, you know, almost hysteria about the bombing has been a media created damn thing.
Totally.
But when you come down to it, the bombing is over. We're going back to the table, and we're going to have an agreement.
South Vietnam's president, Nguyen Van Thieu, feared the peace deal would be the end of South Vietnam. Alexander Haig reported to the president.
He basically feels he's been screwed. He knows he has no alternative. And he's going to come along. He told me he was.
And he's got to comply or his ass.
Yeah, great guy. Great guy. Billy Graham. The pride of North Carolina. And it went on from that. It wasn't just, well, you know, Mr. President, they're God's timepiece. No, Billy Graham said, they're the ones putting out the pornographic stuff. The Jewish stranglehold has got to be broken or the country's going down the drain. And then Billy Graham went on to explain how fundamentally dishonest he was. Of course he was. He was a preacher. I go and I keep friends with Mr. Rosenthal. He's talking about the executive editor of the New York Times at the time. I go and keep friends with Mr. Rosenthal at the New York Times and people of that sort, you know. And all, I mean, not all the Jews, but a lot of the Jews are great friends of mine. They swarm around me and are friendly to me because they know I'm friendly with Israel. But they don't know how I really feel about what they're doing to this country. And I have no power, no way to handle them. But I would stand up if under proper circumstances. So after he had denied ever saying any of those things, and the tapes then came out, he gave an interview to Newsweek. Billy Graham did. And he told Newsweek, if it wasn't on tape, I would not have believed it. I guess I was trying to please. I felt so badly about myself. I couldn't believe it. I went to a meeting with Jewish leaders and I told them I would crawl to them to ask their forgiveness. Yeah. And you know, for being such a faithful servant of the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky, God wasn't very nice to him in his final years. Maybe it was a message. A message obviously missed by his son Franklin. He got Parkinson's, suffered with it for years. Then he broke a hip. Then he broke a pelvis, his pelvis. Then he had prostate cancer. And then he had to have a shunt put in his brain to keep off excess fluid. And then he went to the hospital in 2011, 2012, and 2013 for breathing problems. So that is the man that the state of North Carolina is going to replace a white supremacist with in Statuary Hall. A raging anti-Semite who only repented once he got caught. Honest to Pete. Now, I know Ron's there in Raleigh, and we got other friends, Bob and Albert and others. And I got a question. Isn't there anybody in North Carolina more worthy than a lying, hypocritical anti-Semite like Billy Graham? Anybody? I mean, I came up with an idea. Remember how we've talked about having an interstate compact where states will agree that their electoral college votes will go to the winner of the popular vote. There's a lot of interstate compacts. There's interstate compacts on, interstate compacts on revocation of driver's licenses. Things like that. So how about this for an interstate compact? North Carolina and West Virginia need to enter into an interstate compact and they agree, North Carolina agrees to make its other statue in Statuary Hall, Andy Griffith. And West Virginia pulls Francis Harrison Pierpont. Well, no, not him. Let's go with John E. Kenna. West Virginia pulls its statue of John E. Kenna and replaces him with a statue of Don Knotts. And then it could turn into a growing thing. I read somewhere that the guy who played Otis the Town Drunk was from Wisconsin. Maybe Wisconsin could pull one of its statues and replace it with him. Or where is Floyd the Barber? Where's he from? Howard McNear played Floyd the Barber. And he was he was born in Los Angeles. So California could get in on it. How about Aunt B? Francis Bavier. She was born in New York City. So that could bring New York into the thing. Alabama could get on board with Jim Nabors. Or, hey, George Lindsay, Goober. Because right now they've got a Confederate war officer as one of their statues. Helen Keller stays. Joe Wheeler needs to go. Replace him with either Jim Nabors or George Lindsay. But in all seriousness, North Carolina doesn't have anything better. I mean, Andy Griffith is better. Andy Griffith spread more goodwill than Billy Graham ever did. And I don't think there were ever any, I don't think there were ever any tapes of Andy Griffith fulminating about the Jews, Mr. President, the Jews. No. I just thought about the Andy Griffith and Don Knotts connection because, of course, Don Knotts was from Morgantown, West Virginia. Pornographers? Asks Ron in Raleigh. Well, somebody's got to do it. Porn's a good dollar. Good dollar. Peace be upon the late, great prophet Bill Hicks. It's a good dollar. Billy Graham, Jeremy in Vermont, says, But Bob, does Billy know the difference between Yosemite and Yosemite? Yosemite. Adrian. Okay, substitute for North Carolina's in Statuary Hall. Why not Michael Jordan? Asks Billable Rick. I don't think they're allowed. I don't think your statue should be of someone who's still alive. Oh, there's a thought. Maybe I'm wrong. Yeah, that's what I thought. How about Nina Simone? She was born in Tryon, North Carolina. Studied concert, classical piano, enrolled at Juilliard. And changed the shape of modern music. Among other things, with Mississippi Goddamn. That would be just fine. Oh, did anything come of the shit show? Yeah, okay, Ron and Raleigh's helping out. Seriously, how about William Friday, Terry Sanford, hell, even Dean Smith? Dean Smith would be, yeah. But I think I still favor Nina Simone. So anyway, more. Oh! Since we were talking about the pervy preacher in Tennessee, let's go back to revisit Jerry Falwell Jr.'s creepy photograph. He came up with an explanation, if you can call it that. Called into a Virginia radio station to explain why he was seen with his shirt pulled up and his belly out and his underwear showing and his pants unzipped alongside a young lady. Similarly attired, except wearing torn short shorts and her pants unzipped, and Jerry wearing that creepy, skeevy guy who's naked under an overcoat kind of smile he's got.
And I'm just going to throw it to you. What was up with that picture on Instagram?
You know, it was weird because she's pregnant, so she couldn't get her pants zipped. And so I was like trying to like.
And see, this is where the story begins to fall apart. That is almost at the very beginning. See, it's weird because she's pregnant, and she couldn't get her pants up. Now they're on a yacht. Remember, and why was he around a young pregnant woman who couldn't get her pants up? How was it that she came to have her pants down, Jerry?
I had on a pair of jeans that I haven't worn in a long time, so I couldn't get mine zipped either.
Why did you take your jeans with you that you haven't worn in a long time on a yacht trip, Jer?
So I just put my belly. I just put my belly out like hers, and it was just. She's my wife's assistant, and she's a sweetheart, and I should never have put it up, embarrassed her, because Anyway, I've apologized to everybody, and I promise my kids I'm going to try to be better. I'm going to try to be a good boy from here on out.
All right, so and this is...
I guess the guy behind the microphone there in Virginia, the radio station, must be part of the Falwell Empire. So, oh, we'll just laugh about this really weird, creepy, skeevy photograph. Yeah, because the guy behind the microphone would like to keep his job.
Yeah. This is TV show, this Trailer Park Boys thing.
Yeah, whatever. it was the costume party on the and we were on vacation, and anyway, long
So it's a costume now. The jeans that he hadn't worn in a long time that didn't fit, and a plain black t-shirt. And that's his costume for a costume party on a yacht? That's a real knee slapper. Jerry, you big kid, are you?
Story short, it was just in good fun. That's it.
It's all in good fun. Yeah. She's a sweetheart. She's my wife's assistant. Yeah, that's what they call her. That's what I call the pool boy, too. I call him my assistant. Yeah. Yeah. Another suggestion for North Carolina, Buck Leonard. Polonius Monk, says Ron. As to Michael Jordan, Jeremy in Vermont says, I think I mentioned here in the past that Michael Jordan owns or owned stocks in the private prison industry. I'd like to apologize. It was a hit piece targeted at him. In fact, there is a Michael Jordan that does own the stock, but it's not him. And the MJ who owns the private prison industry stock is white Michael Jordan. Thank you for the correction there. Mm-hmm. Bob, stop telling us whose statues can and can't be in Statuary Hall. Okay, Billable. So, the creepy photo of Jerry Falwell prompted a response from an actual student at Jerry Falwell U. A young woman by the name of Alexandra Green took to Twitter and leveled him. Falwell. She said the impulse is to laugh in disgust, horror at the photo, but it should actively anger you on behalf of the students who have faced significant consequences on campus for the same actions. Drinking? Smoking? Possession of cigarettes, alcohol, against the rules regardless of age, could result in a $300 fine, 30 hours community service, and or expulsion. Real people who could not afford the fines have been fined for this. Real people were kicked out for this. And cites to the code of conduct in the handbook. Oh, and unbuttoning your pants, Alexandra Green continued, could cost you $150 and or 15 hours of community service for being in any state of undress with a member of the opposite sex, which Jerry Falwell Jr. was. Also, what half of those women were wearing would disallow them from attending a class, going to the gym, or walking around on campus so as not to risk the purity of men. I guess Falwell's not too concerned about his purity. Again, real students have suffered real consequences for these actions. Real students have been kicked off extracurricular activities, have had to forego groceries to pay fines, have lost their ability to attend Liberty University because of these policies, which apply on or off campus. If you place Jerry in a vacuum, and I heartily endorse the idea, I don't give a whole hoot what he does in his free time. But policies backed by Jerry, signed off by Jerry, reflected on by Jerry, are hurting real young people while Jerry gets to claim religious political persecution on a yacht. Gross. Then she brings the receipts. Romans 2:21. Thou therefore which teachest another, teachest thou not thyself? Romans 2:23. Thou that makest thy boast of the law through breaking the law, dishonorest thou God? If you're going to set a law, you must be the first to follow it. And she adds, the most common reactions to this threat have been just leave, or the students must just like him if they chose to go there. And then she proves, no. And, it's claimed that they were attending a party themed on Trailer Park Boys. Jerry doesn't make a very good Bubbles.
What happened? I left him with Cat Food Mountain.
But I guess he's Teflon. Bulletproof. Jesus. Oh, and a little bit of breaking news via the New York Times just a little bit ago. You know how we had the story about how Cyrus Vance isn't just investigating hush money payments? Because Donald Trump's really terrible, terrible lawyers made that argument? No. We now know, according to the New York Times, that Deutsche Bank was subpoenaed some time back by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. It was last year. Of course, Deutsche Bank has been his favorite lending institution since everybody else stopped doing business with him in the 1990s. So, in the pleadings this week, the Manhattan DA's office said public reports of possibly extensive and protracted criminal conduct at the Trump Organization were part of their investigation. Bank fraud, insurance fraud, and one of them, we don't know how Deutsche Bank did or did not comply. So, among other things, they sought from Deutsche Bank any materials that might point to possible fraud, undervaluations, overvaluations. And, of course, the New York Times reminds us that since it's part of a grand jury investigation, it will be a long time, if ever, that we see it. Nonetheless, day before yesterday, Nitwit Nero said that Cyrus Vance's investigation is
a continuation of the witch hunt. Definitely a continuation of the... This is just a continuation of the witch hunt. It's Democrat stuff. They failed with Mueller. They failed with everything. They failed with Congress. They failed at every stage of the game. This has been going on for 3.5-4 years. This is a continuation of the worst witch hunt in American history. I didn't know anything about nothing.
Yeah, I don't like this reboot of the Untouchables. He's really not. No, he's not. nearly as good as Robert De Niro as Al Capone. Oh, and as an unpaid ad placement, here's the latest from the Lincoln Project.
President Trump gives lots of jobs to his son-in-law, Jared Kushner. Insiders whisper he may be even more powerful than Trump. But like his father-in-law, Jared's not up to the task. This pampered princeling has never met a problem he couldn't f*** up. Take the COVID response Trump has...
Wait a minute. Okay, now it's getting real. This pampered princeling has never met a problem he couldn't fuck up. Because you know these punks and thugs and cut purses and foot pads and highwaymen and lick spittles and boot licks and whatnot. You know they're seeing and hearing these things. And you know it's gotta be intensely infuriating to Jared, to Nitwit Nero. And frankly, I think the Lincoln Project is trying to stoke the stroke.
Sign Jared to handle 150,000 people dead and an economy in ruins.
That by July, the country's really rocking again.
His task force put Trump cronies first. And of course, Jared's family cashed in on bailout money. No surprise from the son of a convicted felon and slumlord who served time in prison. Jared's a perfect fit for this White House. But if you've ever wondered whether this president took COVID-19 seriously, look no further than who he put in charge of protecting America's health. Jared Kushner, Trump's Secretary of Failure. The Lincoln Project is responsible for the content of this advertising.
And I'm happy to share that information. And how do they turn these things out, turn them around as fast as they do? You gotta give them credit for their organizational skills. A couple of days ago on NBC News, some sobering information from Dr. Fauci. He said if we don't get our daily cases down below 10,000 by September, 10,000 a day, if we don't get it below 10,000 a day by September, we're going to have a really bad situation in the fall. As to the economy, well, you know where I stand on this. Dr. Fauci said you may need to pause, you may need to drop back a little bit. States experiencing spikes. I don't think you necessarily have to revert to go all the way back to closing, he said, desperately trying to keep his job. But the maggots have no intention of shutting anything down. They will just let people die because it is what it is. And last week, Arkansas, California, Florida, Montana, Oregon, and Texas all reported their highest single-day death tolls. A doctor in Austin, Texas, former Democratic congressional candidate, too, really opened up on the pandemic. The doctor is Dr. Pritesh Gandhi. And he said, I'm a fucking doctor. I lead a health clinic in East Austin and treat COVID-19 patients. America is out of its mind thinking we're even remotely prepared for school this fall. We're definitely not ready, and if people say we are, it's either out of ignorance or arrogance. and then backs up his claim with facts. How's it going to go this fall when one student has symptoms and it takes 14 days for their COVID swab to result? What about in flu season? We're short on reagents and swabs now, and we'll need double the supply this fall. Parents who stay home who develop symptoms, do they not get high-priority access to rapid testing? Because when stay-at-home dad has a fever, waiting 1 week for test results does nothing for his three young children in their school. Americans do not have access to care. Americans do not have the money to pay for testing and treatment. And our states, by and large, are still not prepared for massive contact tracing. And even the states that are trying, there's, of course, the COVIDiots screaming about how it's communism to contact trace. And all of this comes down, Dr. Gandhi continues, to the absolute disregard for life by this administration and its enablers. All of this performative crap about caring for life, but really, whether it's gun violence, COVID, or poverty, it just doesn't matter to this president and his leadership. Every damn politician in charge of a state with continued spike in COVID cases and delays in testing and tracing should resign. You have failed your constituents. Our nation continues to struggle because we frame every issue by politics. We leave no room for nuance, no room for reasoned debate. Purity tests abound, and therefore we end up with feckless leaders who know not one damn thing about collaboration and execution. That, my friends, is my rant for tonight. Sincerely, a COVID-19 doctor, father and husband, and former congressional candidate, angry after 6 months of fighting a pandemic that we could have prevented. Bloodthirsty bioterrorists. I'll say it and say it and say it and say it. Because they are. And they're hell-bent on forcing kids back into school. Oh, by the way, we've got a little bit more detail on what Dr. Fauci and his family are going through. He was interviewed by Sanjay Gupta on CNN and described what life is like these days.
The president said that this is a historic situation we're facing, so we've just got to focus in on our jobs and worry about relaxing later, but not now for sure.
And I should point out, you were seeing patients earlier today. You're still staying clinically active. I am as well. It is one of the great joys of continuing to be able to practice medicine. You have told me, and you've told others, that you have no intention of not staying in this job, as tough as it's been, frankly, lately. So let me ask the question a little bit differently, because you and I also share, we both have wives and three daughters. How's Christine doing with all this? Has she worried about you? Does she suggested that maybe you pull back at all?
Well, she doesn't suggest I pull back. She's fine. The girls are fine. They're geographically distributed. They're young women now and have their own jobs and their own professions. They're in three separate cities, so I miss seeing them. The only stress, I think, more on the children. Chris is a rock. She's my anchor. Is the really unseemly things that crises bring out in the world. You know, it brings out the best of people and the worst of people. And, you know, getting death threats for me and my family and harassing my daughters to the point where I have to get security is just, I mean, it's amazing. I wouldn't have imagined in my wildest dreams that people who object to things that are pure public health principles are so set against it and don't like what you and I say, namely in the word of science, that they actually threaten you. I mean, that to me is just strange. So other than that, which they're handling well, I wish that they did not have to go through that.
Well, I'm sorry that you're going through that, and your daughters and Christine. I know it can't be easy. Dean Williams referred to this war on science, Dr. Fauci. We're going to talk a little bit about that, but You are the face of science for so many right now, not just here in the United States, but around the world. But I am sorry that you're going through that. There isn't an excuse for that. We have a public health crisis through which you're helping us navigate ourselves.
And see, here's the problem with what Sanjay Gupta just said. There isn't an excuse for that conduct, but there is a cause. And maybe he needed to wait until Dr. Fauci was off his screen to say it, but the cause is sitting ensconced illegitimately at 1600 Black Lives Matter Plaza. The cause is Donald Trump. But you know that. So Monday we had the zombie cicadas in West Virginia. Yesterday was the massive blast that has destroyed or damaged half of the entire city of Beirut. And now comes a new warning from the Centers for Disease Control. Yesterday, the CDC issued a warning to parents and doctors that it expects another outbreak this year of something called acute flaccid myelitis. And it's a horror. It mostly affects children. Wonder what Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head will say about that.
Children don't even get the corona.
Acute flaccid myelitis, a neurologic disease. It peaks every 2 years between August and November. There were 238 cases in 2018. Among other things, it causes paralysis. The disease, once it starts, it progresses quickly. Seldom more than days, and sometimes only just in hours. And can lead to permanent paralysis or respiratory failure in people, especially children who were previously completely healthy. The symptoms of acute flaccid myelitis are recent or current respiratory illness, fever, pain or numbness in the limbs, difficulty walking, talking, or swallowing, headache, back or neck pain, or facial weakness. Any sudden arm or leg weakness in a child should cause parents to seek immediate medical care. As to the 2018 outbreak, it most often first presented as respiratory illness and fever, and then the limb weakness. Here's how much we don't know. Scientists think that acute flaccid myelitis is caused by a virus, but they don't know for sure. Thomas Clark, deputy director of CDC's Division of Viral Diseases, said, "We've learned a lot, but we have a lot to learn about AFM. We don't yet know why certain kids develop AFM when the great majority who have respiratory illness recover with no neurologic symptoms. Not understanding risk factors means I also can't tell parents anything specific they can do to prevent AFM, but it's important to remember usual hygiene measures we recommend in respiratory virus season." And therein, you know, frequent hand washing, sanitizing objects that are frequently touched, and getting one's flu vaccine. In 2018, the average median age of patients with AFM was 5 years old. 58% of the patients were male. It resulted in hospitalization in 98% of the patients. In 54% of the patients, an ICU was involved. And 23% of the patients required a vent. So we got that coming in the middle of a pandemic. And of course, if you I need not say that this will be another hoax. but based upon how it spreads? Well, it'll spread more effectively in face-to-face schooling. Which, of course, the maggots are eager to get going. And the federal spigot is, since this is prayer meeting Wednesday, the federal spigot has been opened. That, according to Bill Pepe the Frog Barr and Precious Princess Iwanka Madaddy Trump Kushner, the Justice Department is giving Hookers for Jesus a grant. Reuters reports that the grant's going to go to Hookers for Jesus, even though there were whistleblower reports that pointed to serious problems with previous federal funds given to the grift, program. Union officials claim that the group got the grant because of, political favoritism, patronage. If you are taken in and provided shelter by Hookers for Jesus, and you stay at their safe house, you have to go to church. You have to do Christian homework. You are forbidden from reading, quote, secular magazines with articles, pictures, etc., that portray worldly views, advice on living, sex, clothing, makeup tips. And all the while, there is a legal requirement that grant monies like this not be used to promote religion, which they do. And so now, your tax dollars at work, Hookers for Jesus is going to get the whopping sum of $498,764 in brand new federal money. Nice upgrade, says the boss. Wait. Oh, I'm sorry. That was an Idiocracy reference. Agnes said, send upgrade. That's upgrade with two D's for a double dose of his pimping. I had a Dutch friend once. His name was Untgrad. I got it. Agnes has been closely examining Jer Jer's skeevy photo. I think that is his wedding ring, honey. Okay, it's not. She says, where's his wedding ring? The red belly ends right above his pubic line. No, that's his wedding ring. Agnes says, that's an idiot. A idiot, yes. God, that's a gross photo. And speaking of taxpayers taking it in the shorts, public monies were what was behind the development of, or the attempts to develop, a COVID-19 vaccine. Moderna has entered another phase of trials of what they think is going to be a vaccine. Again, the vaccine was developed entirely with money from we the people. Peter May Barduk is director of the Access to Medicines Program at Public Citizen. He said taxpayers are paying for 100% of Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine development, all of it, and yet taxpayers may wind up paying tens of billions of dollars more to Moderna to buy our vaccine back if it proves safe and effective. Because Moderna has announced that they will charge between $32 and $37 per dose for a COVID-19 vaccine if it proves effective. Up against the wall, you redneck mothers. They're in phase three clinical trials right now. 30,000 adult volunteers who don't have COVID-19 expected to step up to get it. And they're gonna rob us blind. Now see, a $32 to $37 vaccine is not going to be available to every American, even if it works. A $32 to $37 vaccine means that there are a shit ton of human beings. That's a complicated medical term, shit ton. A shit ton of human beings who won't take it, and therefore we will not reach herd immunity, which you have to have a vaccine to accomplish. For context, Meg Terrell, who's the senior health and science reporter at CNBC, for context, she says, the $32 to $37 per dose Moderna cites for smaller volume agreements of COVID-19 vaccine is 60% more on the low end than the Pfizer price of $19.95 per dose agreement with the U.S. government. Moderna notes that the price would be lower for larger volume agreements. And they also note that the price will go up after the pandemic. Yeah, it's hard. This business with Jerry Falwell is, it's like a brain, it's like some sort of CT alpha 6 brain worm or something. Brother Deacon Ace asked, anyone else get the feeling Jer sounded like he was completely wasted? Yeah, there's that. Dustin, meanwhile, says, I refuse to believe that God is male, when in the Kevin Simpson movie Dogma depicted God as looking a lot like Alanis Morissette. True. Thanks, Sparky, for that acute flaccid myelitis story. And at the shit show today, Sparky monitored it as long as he could bear it. A reporter tells him that they've talked to the Secretary of State of Nevada and they have no problem with mail-in ballots. He turns around and just makes shit up about mail-in ballots in Nevada because the maggot maladministration is suing Nevada. I don't know on what their theory is. Fuck, Sparky notes. He still doesn't know what happened in Beirut.
Well, I said it was an attack. I don't know.
And then Sparky says, I can't watch it anymore. The stupidity's too thick. It's over anyway. He blathered about how the virus escaped from China. Then garbled about the payroll tax. And what a great job Arizona's doing, you know, controlling the virus. Shh. As Sparky points out, Arizona COVID-19 cases have hit over 182,200. The state also reported 87 new deaths related to the virus. At present, Arizona has 3,932 COVID deaths. And Wednesday's totals for the numbers were higher than Tuesday's totals. Jesus. 123,082 cases in Maricopa County, Arizona. Coconino, 3,033. Navajo County, 5,309. Apache County, 3,119. Pinal County, 8,297. Pima County, 16,963. Twelve people under the age of 20 have died of it. Somebody tell Rand Paul. 20 to 44 age group, 229 are dead in Arizona. 271 between the ages of 45 and 54. Between 55 and 64, 593 people. And 65 and above, 2,827. And from the Department of, oh, kids seldom get it anyway, they'll be fine. In Arizona alone, 21,884 children less than 20 years old have gotten it. In the 20 to 44 demographic, 89,347 have gotten it. 28,305, 45 to 54, 55 to 64, 21,503, 20,764 above 65 have gotten it. Unknown, 300. And as is always the case, it is roaring through the prison system. Dateline Tucson, Arizona. An announcement by the Arizona Department of Corrections late Tuesday evening. 517 inmates at Southside State Prison in Tucson. 517 inmates have tested positive. Yeah. And according to Deborah, it's largely a matter of asymptomatic spread. Jesus. Data nerd update coming from Steve in New York. The last time there were less than just 10,000 cases per day was March 25th. And that makes it super double plus terrifying to hear Dr. Fauci say we've got to get back below 10,000 a day. University of Vermont announced two positive COVID cases today of kids returning to attend fall classes. That, according to Jeremy. Randy in PA wants to know, where did the Lincoln Project come from? Its creation was announced several months back. Rick Wilson, Steve Schmidt, Rick Tyler, and basically an ingathering of the Never Trump Republicans. Their goal being to provide support and attack ads to bring enough Republicans over away from Donald Trump to keep him from being reelected. Because the ads are biting, they're ferocious. But there's also nothing in them that people on our side of the political spectrum don't already know. Those ads are not for us. They're for people who have been blinded by Republicanism for the last two generations. As far as the folks at Moderna are concerned, Ron and Raleigh with a good question. Imagine, Bob, what if Sabin or Salk had acted like these greedy bastards? How many people would have contracted polio? We've become a nasty, venal, selfish country. We have. Oh, and from Pop Culture, Ron asks, what did you think of Perry Mason's transition to defense attorney from Gumshoe? It was an interesting plot twist. uh-oh, we're kind of spoiling here. It's interesting. I'm just having a hard time. Matthew Reese is a fine actor. But it still doesn't seem like Perry Mason to me. At least not based on the books of Earl Stanley Gardner or the TV show from the 50s. But it is kind of fun when somebody says a name and you go, ah, that's who you are. Still haven't seen this past Sunday's episode. Lou with the question, why can't the Democratic Party and or its allies get commercials out similar to and as fast as the Lincoln Project does? Well, first of all, they have a shit ton of resources. And they're not necessarily buying they're relying on social media to spread them for the most part. They will buy ad placements in the D.C. market, and they'll buy ad placements on cable news shows, so they make sure that Nitwit Nero sees them. That's why I say they're trying to stoke the stroke. But, and I know Steve has said, Steve in New York has said we need to be as mean as the Lincoln Project is. And there's an amount of truth in that. And so the why can't the Democratic Party do it is partly, we don't want to. We want to be better than that. We want to be above that. And frankly, that's the same attitude that let, beginning in the late 80s, Rush Limbaugh's brand of toxic, hate-filled conservatism take over the country. Because there were a bunch of people on our side saying, like, we don't want to be like him. And so the next thing you know, almost all the liberal or progressive radio is fucking gone. Answering the question, Steve says, the Lincoln Project, how do they do it so quickly? That's what's called a war room, because as much as I hate to say it, Republicans are that good. The last time any Democrat was remotely that good was the Bill Clinton campaign in 1992. You know, with the sign that said, it's the economy, stupid. And old snakehead James Carville was that good in the same vein as your Steve. He won. Steve Schmidt, Rick Wilson, they lost. Steve in New York says, Hookers for Jesus, founder Stormy Daniels. Yeah, not really, but that's funny. Meanwhile, having spoken and talked about Arizona, the Washington Post has a story. These are the words of Jeff Gregorich. He's a school superintendent in Arizona. He said, this is my choice, but I'm starting to wish that it wasn't. I don't feel qualified. I've been a superintendent for 20 years, so I guess I should be used to making decisions, but I keep getting lost in my head. I'll be in my office looking at a blank computer screen, and then all of a sudden, I realize a whole hour's gone by. I'm worried. I'm worried about everything. Each possibility I come up with is a bad one. The governor's told us we have to open our schools to students on August 17th or else we miss out on 5% of our funding. I run a high-needs district in middle of nowhere, Arizona. We're 90% Hispanic and more than 90% free and reduced lunch. These kids need every dollar we can get. But COVID is spreading all over this area and hitting my staff, and now it feels like there's a gun to my head. I already lost one teacher to this virus. Do I risk opening back up, even if it's going to cost us more lives? Or do we run school remotely and end up depriving those kids? This is your classic one-horse town. Picture John Wayne riding through cactuses and all that. I'm superintendent, high school principal, and sometimes the basketball referee during recess. This is a skeleton staff, and we pay an average salary of about $40,000 a year. I got nothing to cut. We're buying new programs for virtual learning and trying to get hotspots and iPads for all our kids. 5% of our budget is hundreds of thousands of dollars. Where's that going to come from? I might lose teaching positions or basic curriculum unless we somehow get up and running. I've been in the building every day sanitizing doors and measuring out space in classrooms. We still haven't received our order of plexiglass barriers, so we're cutting up shower curtains and trying to make do with that. It's one obstacle after the next. Just last week, I found out we had another staff member who tested positive, so I went through the guidance from OSHA and the CDC. Oh, there's a legitimate reference to OSHA and the CDC. And tried to figure out the protocols. I'm not an expert in any of this, but I did my best with the contact tracing. I called 10 people on staff and told them they had had a possible exposure. I arranged separate cars and got us all to the testing site. Some of my staff members were crying. They've seen what can happen, and they're coming to me with questions I can't always answer. Does my whole family need to get tested? How long do I have to quarantine? What if this virus hits me like it did Mrs. Bird? We got back two of those tests already, both positive. We're still waiting on 8 more. That makes 11% of my staff that's gotten COVID, and we haven't had a single student in our building since March. Part of our facility is closed down for decontamination, but we don't have anyone left to decontaminate it unless I want to put on my hazmat suit and go in there. We've seen the impacts of this virus on our maintenance department, on transportation, on food service, on faculty. It's like this district is shutting down case by case. I don't understand how anyone could expect us to reopen the building this month in a way that feels safe. It's like they're telling us, okay, summer's over, it's been long enough, time to get back to normal. But since when has this virus operated on our schedule? I dream about going back to normal. I'd love to be open. These kids are hurting right now. I don't need a politician to tell me that. We only have 300 students in this district, and they're like family. My wife is a teacher here, and we had 4 kids go through these schools. I know whose parents are laid off from the copper mine and who doesn't have enough to eat. We delivered breakfast and lunches this summer, and we gave out more meals each day than we have students. I get phone calls from families dealing with poverty issues, depression, loneliness, boredom. Some of these kids are out in the wilderness right now, and school's the best place for them. We all agree on that. But every time I start to play out what it looks like on August 17th, I get sick to my stomach. More than a quarter of our students live with grandparents. These kids could very easily catch this virus and spread it and bring it back home. It's not safe. There's no way it can be safe. If you think anything else, I'm sorry. But it's a fantasy. Kids will get sick or worse. Family members will die. Teachers will die. And then he goes into the survivor's guilt over a teacher, one of his teachers that died. He says, we got the whole staff together for grief counseling. We did it virtually over Zoom. He talks about how his wife has asthma. He talks about how the kids love her and they automatically come up and give her a hug. That's Arizona. And then, out of Georgia, Gwinnett County, last week, had 270 staff members in their educational system. Out with the Rona. There's no way that these monstrosities aren't exactly that. Anyone arguing for schools to be opened is arguing for people in their own communities to be mercilessly killed. Damn. Oh, an update from a couple of nights ago. Remember Luray, Virginia, Mayor Barry Pressgraves? I was talking with Scott about him. He's been pressed to resign as mayor of Luray. And he took to his Facebook account to post the following. Joe Biden has just announced Aunt Jemima as his VP pick. A couple of nights ago, Tucker Carlson, the de facto head of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda's white supremacist movement, asked, talking about Joe Biden's commitment to picking a woman as his running mate, preferably a black woman. Tucker Carlson said, "Is that even legal?" Fucking Nazi. And then Mayor Pressgraves. Joe Biden's just announced Aunt Jemima as his VP pick. And Mayor Pressgraves, having been called upon to resign, responded simply, "Hell no! The people elected me and I have a few months more to serve." Hell no. The town of Luray issued an official pronouncement. The town of Luray's mission statement, included in our personnel policies manual, states, "It is the mission of every town employee to deliver quality service to our residents, customers, and visitors in an efficient, effective, and equitable manner in order to promote pride in our community. We believe that our employees and every person in our community deserves fair and just treatment. The many voices of our community welcome all to Luray. The town of Luray rejects racism and is committed to working together with the community through understanding, compassion, and opportunity. Town Council will discuss events leading to this statement at their August 10th meeting. Town of Luray seeks to continue our ability to serve our community and welcomes any constructive suggestions to accomplish this goal. If you have any suggestions, please contact the town manager." And then, of course, Mayor Pressgraves said, "Well, this was about a prominent woman who made pancake batter, and the company was forced to take it off, which was wrong. This was no more racist than the names I've been called. I don't have," and there it is, "I don't have a racist bone in my body, but everything that ain't bone is." No, I added that part. "I had no idea people would react the way they did. If I had a chance to do it over, I wouldn't do it. You can apologize all you want, but no one will believe it." You know, for fuck's sake. He's been called Aunt Jemima? "This was about a prominent woman who made pancake batter." She was not a prominent woman. I remember the night when our buddy Dan Fisher deconstructed that load of horse shit. Ugh. Hell no, he ain't resigning. He ain't got a racist bone in his body. Fuck's sake. Oh, let's see. Steve says, "I love you all. Sorry, Horn family. I need to sign off. It's becoming a bit too raw for me tonight. Stay safe and wear your mask." Indeed. The difference between Carville and Schmidt, James in Illinois points out, it was the candidates. Carville had Clinton. Schmidt was opposed by Obama, who alongside Clinton were two of the most gifted politicians of their respective eras, and both were willing to let some of the details slip past them. That's what politicians do. Still, head and shoulders above their Republican counterparts, Bishop Willard and John McCain. Oh, well, there will be another Trump-trum. That's a new word, Trump-trum, tantrum and Trump. There will be another, a new Trump-trum, because Facebook pulled a post from his page. Because it was a post of a clip of an interview he gave on Fox and Fiends, in which he claimed that, made bullshit claims about children and COVID. Thanks, David, in South Carolina, Stan. Not a racist bone in his body? Of course not, says Steve in New York. All his bones are racist. Jimmy in the Great Northwest says, I'm liking Perry Mason, but Paul Drake was black. It's like meeting the characters from the beginning. Burger Ham meeting the main characters from the start. So far, I'm liking it. It's an interesting storyline. Without a doubt. Again, I just get the sneaking suspicion that they couldn't afford Raymond Chandler or Dashiell Hammett, but they got rights to Perry Mason. Meanwhile, I'm still waiting for somebody at HBO to develop the entire Travis McGee series by John D. McDonald. Do it just like Mad Men, you know, period, with all the warts and everything, and watch Travis McGee change and grow through time. Meanwhile, Darlene lets us know that, Governor Lamont requests investigation of utilities amid widespread outages from tropical storm. Here we go again with this bullshit, says Darlene. Connecticut was devastated by Storm Isaias. Over 90% of my town is out of power. 700,000 outages statewide yesterday, and it's down to around 500,000 today, which we're being told is a good thing and that progress is being made. Hooray. Let's be clear. Connecticut Public Utilities Regulatory Authority, or PURA, does not balance Connecticut residents' right to safe, adequate, and reliable utility service at reasonable rates with the provider's right to a reasonable return on its investment. It's all about the investor's return. Ironically, Eversource and United Illuminating, with PURA's blessing, just massively hiked electrical rates on Connecticut residents a few weeks ago, and there was such massive public outcry for the first time ever that PURA and the utilities companies backed off and said they'd investigate that latest heist. So we're back to square one, i.e. the 2011 catastrophic nor'easter 2 days before Halloween, when the utilities companies failed catastrophically, and then Governor Malloy, a corporate Democrat, declared his hatred of trees everywhere and lambasted the utilities companies, demanding that every tree and tree limb anywhere near our antiquated power line infrastructure meet its demise, and that tree purging and attrition continues to this day. The response to what happened in 2011 was supposed to prevent what happened yesterday. So much for that. PURA to do the investigation? That's rich. Governor Lamont's calls for penalties, if warranted, will be a slap on the wrist. This is a systemic for-profit model problem. I'm so tired of how this country operates. Capitalism is not appropriate in all circumstances. So-called public utilities is one of those circumstances. We will be without power for several more days. Oh, I'm so sorry, Darlene. I know what that feels like. And Eversource utilities trucks have been noticeably AWOL. Finally just saw a caravan of four massive tree trucks and three smaller support trucks drive by from a company I don't even recognize. My town informs me that they hope we'll have power back on by the weekend, and I live along a major state road. Oh, God, there's no end to that frustration. I'm sure ICE is nowhere in sight. And, Jesus. Everything in your fridge and your freezer will go bad if you don't have a bunch of ice and coolers. Hopefully, well, when the derecho ripped through here, FEMA was as useless as screen door on a submarine. I mean, the fact that we just replaced, through the kindness of a member of our community, We just replaced a refrigerator that was killed during the derecho 8 years ago. Speaks to how useful FEMA was. Freight Train Frank has offered us a new word. Let's call the return to the classroom school-icide. That's a good one. That's a good one, Frank. Oh, and a story that I meant to get to yesterday, but somehow didn't. Well, it's the story of Adam Zaborowski. From the Washington Post. Another dangerous COVIDiot. Adam Zaborowski went into a cigar shop, and the guy behind the counter, the clerk, well, hold on, we don't know it was a guy, the person behind the counter, the clerk, told Adam Zaborowski that he had to wear a mask in the shop. Adam Zaborowski, 35 years old, said, "No, I ain't gonna do it. You can't make me freedom liberty." He was pissed off. So he grabbed two cigars in the store in Bethlehem Township, PA, grabbed a couple of cigars, stomped outside, then turned around, pulled a handgun, and took a shot at the clerk. It took the police an entire day, but they cornered, the police did, Zaborowski near his home, at which point he decided to shoot it out with the cops with his AK-47 Freedom Protector. He shot it out with seven cops, at least. And eventually, Zaborowski did get shot multiple times and was placed under arrest. His lawyer is John Waldron. And speaking to a newspaper in the area this past Sunday, Zaborowski's lawyer said, "Well, he just wasn't dealing well with the loss of his job, the loss of his child, just not handling the pandemic well." Because he'd lost his job and he'd lost custody of his child. Wonder why. But you know, he's just not dealing well with it. And I know exactly where he was. He was at Cigars International in Bethlehem. Used to order from them. And once again, what happened? The clerk said, "You got to wear a mask in here." He said, "I ain't gonna." The clerk offered to serve him curbside. But Adam Zaborowski's a fucking mask hole and a COVIDiot, and he yanked a piece of paper out of his pocket and said that Pennsylvania state law says I ain't got to wear no mask. Pennsylvania's mask mandate went into place on July the 1st. He shot his Freedom Protector pistol once in the air and twice at a clerk who walked up to him outside. And there were other people out in the parking lot area in the area where he was, in the direction where he was firing. And because the goddess of irony is a good and attentive goddess, it turns out that the seven cops that he shot it out with, the ones who managed to shoot him, they shot him in the ass and the leg, and he is expected to recover. His lawyer, Waldron, said, The fact that he got shot twice with non-life-threatening injuries when he had an AK-47 and another handgun, Adam is very fortunate he ended up the way he did. Now, the one thing they don't mention in this news story is that Adam Zaborowski is, come on, we know what this is, Adam Zaborowski is white. Because there's no way that he doesn't get his neck knelt on or just blown away in a hail of gunfire if he's not. He's not handling the pandemic well. And like the pandemic itself, it's hard to see how this doesn't just continue to get worse. How does it not? Damn. And of course, it's not just the United States that's fucking up the response. Agence France-Presse reports that Flavio wants to know, did the clerk survive? There's nothing to indicate that the clerk was even hit. He shot at, not shot. So, but I'm guessing probably the clerk would need, if we lived in a country that had anything resembling mercy, get all the counseling work needed. Flavio says, I wonder how Adam Zaborowski votes. Do you really, Flavio? Do you really wonder? Because I have no doubt whatsoever how he votes. James in Illinois, Perry Mason, the things that stick with us. I remember watching the television program, which was a whole lot more white bread than the HBO drama. What would you expect from one to the other? I always had the feeling that Mason and Berger were working more as partners than adversaries, and Mason almost always won. Once or twice, when I remember him losing, he seemed to come out as the good guy for allowing the snake in the grass client to be exposed by Berger. So seeing how the HBO tale unfolds with Berger coming along the way he did kind of explains the seeming partnership. I'm loving it and can't wait for the next episode. Where's the body? Ooh. I guess that's not a spoiler. No. I mentioned we're not the only ones fucking it up. According to Health Minister Ahmad Jawad Osmani in a press briefing, nearly a third of the population of Afghanistan, 10 million people, has been infected with COVID-19. There was a survey based on antibody tests about 9,500 people across Afghanistan. World Health Organization helped out. And based on the statistical analysis of the survey, 31.5% of the Afghan population has contracted the virus. The highest infection rate is in Kabul, where more than half of the city's 5 million people were thought to have been infected. And they note, Agence France-Presse does, Afghanistan got it in February when thousands of migrants returned from Iran which was at that point in time the worst, most suffering nation in the world. Of course, I'm guessing having your country torn to pieces by the United States doesn't help in terms of responding to pandemics. Looking here to. Out of Washington State, a woman was out for a run. Vancouver, Washington. She was working out at a running track between Clark College and Hudson's Bay High School on, last week. Got into an argument with a man who wasn't wearing a mask or adhering to social distancing guidelines. Washington's had a mask mandate since June. Well, after the argument, she went to her car, and the mask hole COVIDiot followed her. And then he punched her several times and kicked her in the head and torso while she was on the ground. And then he and a woman with him bugged out in a black SUV. So far, the Vancouver PD has not been successful in identifying the mask hole COVIDiot. Ugh. But Bob, says Jeremy in Vermont, if only the hijackers on 9/11 hadn't come from Afghanistan, they'd all be fine. Oh, wait. Yeah, not from Afghanistan. Yeah. Flavio lets us know a bus driver in Bordeaux, in France, was knifed to death because of a mask requirement. It's not just us. No, no, not just us. So, as prayer meeting Wednesdays go, this is, you know, this is a Lulu. Oh, and by the way, Frank Lively, we haven't heard from him in a little while. He's the guy behind Uganda's Kill the Gays bill. And he's calling for a Christian exodus of American cities. What, is this some sort of evangelical manifestation of the advice in John Prine's Spanish Pipe Dream? Throw away your paper, blow up your TV, move to the country, find Jesus on your own. Well, kind of, but he's different. This evangelical fundamentalist homosexual, I mean, he's got a reason. Yeah, this from a radio show that he's on the weekends.
Why are the Democrats burning down their own cities? What they're doing is they're setting up a scenario in which they've agitated and inflamed the black community, mm-hmm. and then pitted them against the police, so that they can blame the blacks for the collapse of the cities, and they can discredit the police, so it's easy to justify not paying them these exorbitant pensions that they've been negotiating. Mm-hmm. They're not. These are unfunded mandates.
Wow, right? my eyes are rolling back in my head.
The police have always gone along with the Democrat bond issues and all the different revenue increases, tax increases, and everything, because they were bought off with promises of ever more exorbitant amounts of pension money in their future pensions. But mm-hmm. they're not paid for. They've always been unfunded mandates that were just going to be pushed down the road. Now they've reached a place where the income that they have to pay even for the infrastructure they already have has now been diminished, and they're scrambling, right? They're scrambling, and they know they're going to take the white liberals who run this system are going to take the blame unless they can shift it onto somebody else.
My God, this man's crazier than a hoot owl that's been eating zombie cicadas. That's just a conspiracy with too many damn moving parts. It's all set up. And so what do the Christians need to do?
And that's what they're doing. They're going to shift the blame onto the blacks, right? Because they're the ones that are on camera all the time, burning down a small percentage of the black community, right? This is by no means.
How about a no percentage of the black community? How about the fact that we now know that the property violence that started in Minneapolis was started by a what? Yeah, a right winger, a Trumper, a maggot, a Trumpanzee, a member of the outlaw cowboy bikers of the apocalypse and the Hell's Angels and whatnot. Yeah, that seems to have escaped old Scott Lively there.
The majority of blacks is a small percentage. But blacks are all collectively going to be.
Wait. Did we just have the not all blacks moment courtesy of Scott Lively?
Taking responsibility and blame for the meltdown of the cities, which is inevitable at this point. And the police are being delegitimized because there's no possible way they're going to be able to pay their pensions. And that this way, at least they might even come out at some point and say that we're going to remove the pension obligations. We don't consider ourselves obligated to pay the pensions of these police departments because they're systemically racist. And they're the ones that caused the black community to rise up and rebellion against them, right? This is all a setup. So I think this is happening at the state. And so if you're living in one of those places, you're a conservative, you're a Christian, living in any of those places, get the heck out of there before it all collapses. Because
what he wants to bet Scott Lively's got a backup plan to buy him some Christian Exodus homes. Why not just pray for the rapture, for fuck's sake? God, these people. Nuttier than a Christmas fruitcake. Jesus. Well, apparently, Kenneth Copeland's a happy guy. He's been running something called a Southwest Believers Convention. It's taking place in an indoor convention center in Fort Worth. It is a super spreader event. Of course, you'll recall Kenneth Copeland declared that COVID was over because he blew it away. Him and that weird-ass Greek chorus. But he wanted to know, he wanted his marks, a congregation, to know what a success it had been.
Anyway, and I said it coming into this meeting, the budget amount for this meeting, $1,132,000. Offerings received so far, $1,345,129.
Oh, and that they're all in there in that auditorium. And in this case, auditorium is spelled O-D-D-I-T-O-R-I-U-M. They're all there in that auditorium, not a mask to be found, hooting and hollering and cheering and yawping and larping and smollicking and grabulating and wallering and lollygagging and singing and hollering and praising and raising their hands in the air like Yzma. And, oh, they're so happy. Imagine how far droplets or particles travel when they are hooted like that. Not one mask.
Well, ministries that the Word of Faith preachers. I didn't know this till tonight. I mean, they handed me this just before we left the hotel, you know, in my...
Yeah, dang.
But they got together and sowed the money into it. Glory to God. I don't have words to say.
Yeah, I'll bet you don't.
Glory be to God. So, from night one, we're over the budget. Glory to God. Hallelujah. $213,000 over it right now. Glory be to Jesus.
Now let's... Yeah, I'll bet you. Does Jesus get to ride on your jet, Kenny?
See, Lord, okay. Father, we pray over this.
Yeah, I'll bet you do. You gonna pray that none of those sheep get the Rona? Nah, because the Rona's not real. Right? Sure. Damn. Well, exactly. Randy and PA pointing out, God's all powerful, but he needs money. Oh, what a neat photo. Alma with a note says, speaking of a hootie owl, this is our friend Al the Owl above us while we were working in the yard this morning. Oh, what a noble raptor. That's just gorgeous, Alma. Uh-oh, done got all over Dave in the blinds. Last nerve. Hold on a goddamn minute, Bob. This guy claiming that the liberals are going to blame the blacks, and I use both terms in the broadest sense. It sounds to me like he's a fundamentalist version of Chairman Mao. Let's go back to the country so that we can take over. I wish the evangelicals would buy a piece of land in remote Alaska. I'm thinking the city of Juneau, Alaska. You might ask me why. Well, the city of Juneau is on an island. It's the only state capital that does not have a road leading to it. You have to take a boat or a plane to get there. After they purchase the city, they can then walk across the water and get whatever supplies they need. And, oh, as an added bonus, we will limit them to one Bible of their choosing and one round of ammunition and one firearm per person. If you want more ammo, you have to wait a month or bargain with your neighbors. Dave in the blind is always coming up with some fine, fine ideas. Jude lets us know Washington State's primary was yesterday. Jude says a hardcore right-winger and relatively unknown. Republic Washington Chief of Police Leon Culp. Looks like he'll be in a position to run against Governor Inslee in November. I could go on about this, Jude says. I could go on about his history, but to encapsulate it, Ted Nugent wrote the foreword for his latest book, and Tucker Carlson interviews him. Republic Washington is in the northeast, about 20 miles or so from the Canadian border. This same area, a neo-Nazi group, The Base, hid out, monitored by the Southern Poverty Law Center, along with concerns of the FBI. And believe it or not, this is just the tip of this iceberg. Nowhere safe. These assholes have spread like the virus itself over the years. Jude says, my best to the community in the midst of everything that's going on. Bad news in Tennessee, as we wrap up the program. David in South Carolina, Stan shared this along from U.S. News and World Report. Today, the Tennessee Supreme Court said, oh, hell no, to the idea that all eligible voters in Tennessee could vote by mail in November due to COVID-19. Back in June, a lower court had expanded absentee voting because of the Rona, and now this new Supreme Court decision in Tennessee. Well, according to Justice Cornelia Clark, we find that the state's interests in the efficacy and integrity of the election process are sufficient to justify the moderate burden placed on the right to vote of those plaintiffs and persons who neither have special vulnerability to COVID-19 nor are caretakers for persons with special vulnerability to COVID-19. We don't need y'all going out to vote and getting all uppity and stuff. On the other hand, Justice Sharon Lee said this ruling does not go far enough. All qualified Tennessee voters, like voters in 45 other states, should be allowed to apply to vote by absentee mail ballot during the unprecedented and deadly COVID-19 pandemic that's gripping our community, state, nation, and world. But No, those good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Republicans. They don't... not this community, but how hard is it for people on our side to grasp that voting is something Republicans don't like for very many people to fucking do? That's all there is to it. When turnout is high, Republicans lose. When turnout is low, Republicans win. That's why all the voter suppression and the voter ID laws. Because there's hard disenfranchisement and soft disenfranchisement. So that's the program for this evening. Back tomorrow with Thorn in the Side Thursday. And tomorrow's fundraising goal will be $575. Thanks to Cecilia, and thank you to Jeremy for being there tonight. Thank you so much. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air via your subscriptions at PayPal and Patreon, your a la carte contributions, combinations of all of the above. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you this evening to Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. A reminder, Malloy comes your way, as he does every Monday through Friday evening at 9 p.m. at headon.live. Hang out in the chat room if you want to, and listen and gather around the Truth Seeker campfire. We thank Mike a lot for letting us run the program. Thanks go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. We want to keep this community together and not be grieving. Please stay safe. Wear your mask, wear your gloves, stay home if you can, limit your travels to the extent possible. Wash your hands a lot. Don't touch your face. Wear your mask. Social distance. Don't go to any big Christian concerts or ministry meetings with Kenneth Copeland. Jesus, that was a terrifying super spreader, that video. And above all, if you see a maggot, avoid them like the plague, because they are. Later, y'all.